This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Say yes to Pure Leaf Tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf Tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this March. Breakdowns of every region and every game, who are the Cinderellas, and which team's cutting down the nets. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcasts.
And let's head out to the Window Nation Fan Guest Hotline, where our friend IA Hall of Famer Jacob Calvin-Meyer covers the O's for the Baltimore Sun, joins us now. And Jacob, O's beat the Red Sox today, spring training baseball, 12-3. But three guys got hit by pitches, two in the hand. Does it seem like, though, at least early on, they dodged a bullet?
Yeah, they got lucky. It seems like they dodged the bullet. All of those guys were taken out of the game as a precaution, and Coby Mayo was the big one, obviously, getting hit on that right wrist, which is never fun, but it seems like everybody's going to be okay. But we'll see tomorrow for sure.
What about all the other injured guys? Jacob, Jorge Mateo, he participated in the game. Gunnar Henderson ramping up. Grayson Rodriguez going to play catch for what that's worth. What's the latest on those guys?
Yeah, so Gunnar Henderson still is, you know, doing baseball activities, but hasn't taken the next step to playing in games. Hyde did say today that if he's going to be ready for opening day, he needs to get into some Grapefruit League games. There are only five of those left, and you would presume that they would want him to get in a couple. And so that looks, if I'm looking at a day, it's Friday. If he can get in the game Friday, he can play Friday and then Sunday, and then maybe that weird game they have Monday. That seems to be the cutoff, but every day we go without him playing in a game or knowing if he's going to play in a game makes it less and less likely that he's going to be ready for opening day. On to Grayson, he's going to start playing catch tomorrow and sort of restarting his ramp-up process. There's still no timetable on when they think he'll be ready, but if you just kind of do the typical timeline of a six-week spring training plus maybe a rehab assignment, that might be what we're looking at there. And then Jorge Mateo, they keep saying that he's doubtful, but I'm having trouble. I understand Mateo's coming off of a surgery on his left elbow, but I'm having trouble squaring how Gunnar Henderson, who basically hasn't played in any games this spring, is capable of being ready for opening day, but Jorge Mateo, who just played in his first game the other day, is doubtful. I have some theories as to why, but that's where the injuries stand right now.
Wouldn't it be really risky if they are dedicated to Mateo needing, because of the timing he got hurt and how much time he missed, needing time to start the year on the IL and, you know, let him play a couple series in whatever, let him do a little extended spring training and a few games with Norfolk or whatever, then to have Gunnar on your active roster, having only played, let's say, two Grapefruit League games and an injury that seems like it could be easily aggravated, don't you run a risk there? Like, does it not make more sense to play the long game early on and make sure you've got protection at shortstop?
Oh, I think they're going to play the long game for sure. But I think they're going to play the long game by, if there's any doubt about Gunnar Henderson, he's not going to be with the team.
Right, you just put him on IL.
Right. And so, they're also, again, we started a week ago. But let's say that everything remains the same, okay? Which means that Jorge Mateo, who has said all spring that he's going to be healthy for opening day, let's say he's still saying that and that he feels like he's healthy and the team says that he's not, or that he's not ready, or they feel like he's not ready. And so what I mean by playing the long game with Mateo is that if you put him on the opening day roster and Gunnar Henderson isn't, and it takes Gunnar exactly 10 days to get healthy, that's 9 games.
Right.
He comes back, who goes off the roster? And right now, if nobody else gets hurt, there isn't an answer to that question. And the potential answer to that question is Jorge Mateo, and he doesn't have any options, and you will lose him. And they don't want to lose him. So that is a big chunk in this. In my view, that is the only way that I can logically square everything I'm being told by the team.
We're talking with Jacob Calvin-Meyer. It's Inside Access here on the Fan. Jacob, I know that we get ourselves tied up in knots or turned to pretzels looking at spring training stats, and we're supposed to believe that it's guys getting in work and it's not going to matter. But with all that said, are you concerned at all with Sir Anthony Dominguez, who is sporting a 23.14 ERA? He's given up 4 home runs this spring. His whip is over 4.
Yeah, you can't not be concerned about that. I think I wasn't concerned until his most recent outing, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because, listen, it is spring training. This is a veteran who has been a pretty solid reliever for a long time. And so if a guy has a couple of bad outings early in spring, it's like whatever. But when it becomes it basically every outing and there's a week until the season begins, the bullpen as it is constituted right now really isn't a strength to begin with. And on top of that, Felix isn't going to go back to that days, and you don't have Kittredge.
Right.
So your option as a right-handed closer behind Felix, if there's a righty pocket and Felix isn't available, it's almost certainly Dominguez. And that's just not a good situation to be in, because it could be the second day of the season, Felix is down, and there's a righty pocket in the ninth. Cano's already pitched, and you've got to decide between Brian Baker and Sir Anthony Dominguez for the save. Like, that's the situation they're barreling towards right now. But Dominguez has no option, so they just got to work through it.
Let's go to the other side of it. Someone who's performed really well during spring training is Sugano, and you put out a piece for the Baltimore Sun recently. What if he's better than expected? Has he exceeded expectations for you?
Yeah, for me, probably not, but for others, maybe. Like, I think a lot of these players that come over from Japan are probably perpetually underrated, because the question mark of, oh, can they do it here? Can they do it in the big leagues? Most of that's just BS. Like, that league over there is legit. All of those guys, most of those guys are great players. And if you are able to, it's not anybody that comes over here, but if you're able to dominate the MPB, you're likely going to be able to have success here. The level to which he's able to have success is what I'm really looking at, because it could change the complexion of what the rotation looks like if he's able to be right. He probably profiled as a number 4 starter when they signed him, if you look at the money. But if he's able to be something closer to like a number 2 starter, that really does change the way all of this looks. An important thing to track with him is the innings and how often they're going to throw him and the rest in between. That's something that they're going to have to manage throughout the season. Spring training, the competition that he's faced hasn't been excellent. But listen, we all have eyes. When you watch him pitch, well, I guess a lot of fans haven't seen him because Masson doesn't broadcast a lot of these games. But the command is excellent, and you have a 6-pitch mix, and he really knows how to pitch. So it's been fun to watch.
Suarez has looked really good. They continue to build Suarez out. The skipper was on record saying that's our 6 and Povich is our 7. And then I know he kind of
hedged,
tap danced around that. But we've now seen how this organization works for a while. I personally don't think they're building Suarez up to then make him a 6th, 7th inning bridge guy or a replacement for what Dominguez was supposed to be before Kittredge got hurt. I think he's one of their starting pitchers come hell or high water now. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm going back and forth on this, and I can't. Yesterday I was saying that Povich would be the number 5 and that Suarez would be in the bullpen, and then today I'm maybe sort of more in your camp. My what I thought at the beginning of camp was that Suarez was the definite 6, and that if somebody got hurt, it would be him. The thing that's making me question that is, firstly, Povich has looked good. They probably would like a lefty in that rotation. And the bullpen just looks a lot better if Suarez is in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand even in that scenario, he's going to be a long man or a two-inning guy. But let me go back to what I said earlier and pose this hypothetical. Ninth inning, righty pocket, Felix can't pitch, and their options are Dominguez, Baker, and let's add in Albert Suarez. Who would you guys pick for that ninth inning?
Albert Suarez.
Albert Suarez, but he's probably would have thrown 97 pitches the day before.
Yeah. So I think the challenge is, are they willing to make their entire pitching staff better, or are they just hell-bent on Suarez being the five? And another thing to consider is, are they going to go out and acquire somebody in a cash considerations trade at the end of camp like they did in 23 to round out this bullpen? Because as of right now, it kind of seems like if Suarez is that five, the number five starter, that they don't exactly have an eighth guy for the bullpen.
And I brought this up early in the show. I'm not missing anything here. Like, you know, Thad Ward and these dudes, they've talked up at times. Like, I guess Bowman's been okay. But there's nobody breaking through here like we've seen people in the past, correct? Like, yeah, seems to me people who were being talked up very early in camp have quickly fallen by the wayside. Luis Gonzalez, et cetera.
Yeah, that Rodolfo Martinez is not walking through that door. No. The Matt Bowman pitched well, and that's not a surprise. He pitched okay for them late last season, and he's a non-roster guy. He doesn't have options. He probably has an opt-out at the end of camp.
Yeah.
And so he would be the only one, but you're right. The rest of these guys, Colin Selby, who looked good for them last year, Luis Gonzalez, there aren't really, you know, Roansy Contreras was one that I was like, hey, he could be the long man, but he hasn't pitched well this spring, so.
Jacob Calvin Meyer covers the O's for the Baltimore Sun. Jacob, always great, man. Enjoy the warmth, and thank you as always for your time.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks,
you Hall of Famer, you?
Yes.
It's true.
Hall of Fame's good. Hall
I just
of Fame.
Speak facts.
Yeah. You know, yes. You don't have anything to do with that fact, but you speak it.
I knew what I was doing.
You were trying to keep him out.
Yes, it's good. Yes, no, I was trying to add some drama.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's good content. Now, every time you bring him on, you can say, two of us voted for you and one didn't.
Yep. Hey, coming up next, Purple Rain in the forecast. Ravens have a new backup quarterback. Our thoughts on that. And DeAndre Hopkins, interesting words about the wide receiver room. That's next here on The Fan.
From the standpoint of knowing the offense, you don't lose anything. When he's in there, he can read, he can change the play at the line. You saw him doing it last night. He can get you in the right position. But more important than all of it that you're seeing is that when the chips are down or when the bullets are flying, then does he have it? Can he stand in there and make the plays at the critical times? You don't know that until you see it. Well, here he's every chance he's ever had to get in there, he does it. It tells you a lot right there.
It's Jerry Jones during the season singing the praises of Cooper Rush, who had to be put into service as their starting quarterback after Dak Prescott got hurt and actually played pretty well. Well, the Ravens signed him yesterday to a two-year deal. It was originally announced 2 years, $12-plus million. Now it's 2 years, $6.2. It's about $3 million a year, but he's going to back up Lamar Jackson.
It's a really interesting signing. It's a kid I was talking about last week. I put him in my six-pack of guys I want the Ravens to sign and guys who won't break the bank and guys I think who could be incredible value plays. And for essentially 1 year, $3 million, this to me is a home run. He's experienced, but he's young enough with upside. He hasn't just played football. Like, he hasn't been one of these guys you say, oh, well, you know, he's played in some games and he's been a part of some wins. And it's like, The Cutlets kid who ran around and won some games for a hapless team that ended up screwing themselves by not getting the one seed because Cutlets ran around and won some games. Like, this guy's won games where the team's trying to salvage what they thought was a playoff team because Dak Prescott's out for long chunks of time and they're not as talented as the owner thinks they are, and he's keeping them in games. He's winning some games under duress. He's having to deal with, you know, CeeDee Lamb and some of these personalities. Like, they had no running game to speak of. The offensive line has gone into deep decay, but they haven't drafted their way out of it. And he's looked the part to me. I like this kid. And compared to the guys on the market, and we went through them last week, and there's a ton of them, the combination of how much he's played, plus upside, plus age, plus price, plus the kind of games he's played in that have mattered more. I loved him. I didn't think you'd get him this cheap. I thought he'd be more like a $4 to $6 million a year guy. I'm glad they've secured his rights beyond this year, but like, if you look at him and compare him to Dak Prescott in that same offense with those same pieces, I mean, it's pretty similar. The EPA per dropback is very similar. He's got better EPAs against some rushes, 5 and 6 man rushes than Dak had. He takes fewer sacks than Dak. And again, I mean, he's playing with the same group of you know, pass protectors within the same scheme as Dak. He got the wide receivers a little more involved than Dak did. I mean, look, he wasn't pushing the ball down the field a ton, but like, who did they have?
Mm-hmm.
Nah. You had CeeDee Lamb in the slot, and you threw to the running backs a little bit, and you threw to what was left of your tight end group, but like, there wasn't a whole lot of there. I mean, you look at his turnover-worthy throws, 3.9%. Is his skew a little high? Yeah, but then you compare him to other backups and what they were doing, the Mason Rudolphs of the world who just got signed. It's a lot better than that. I like this kid. I think this kid in a 4 to 8 week window could help you play at least 500 football or better. He won't cost you games. He's worldly enough to know the job description. And within the confines of a Todd Monken offense, with the pieces they have here, I think he's savvy, athletic, smart, and talented enough to save your season.
And the 8 games that he started last year, they were 500. And he won 4 of 5 in one of those stretches in one of those games, including where they won at Washington, where he played really well in that game. They needed to start to invest in the backup quarterback position. And this isn't a huge contract by any stretch, but it's easily their best backup option that they've had in quite some time.
Yeah. Well done.
Yeah, Ronnie Stanley met with the media today over Zoom. We will hear from him tomorrow. But coming up next, we get back to the Terps. We know their draw. What does Gene Wong think about them having to go out west? He covers the Terps for the Washington Post. He joins us next. Maryland's the 4 seed in the West. They take on Grand Canyon 4:30 on Friday. Pregame coverage starts at 3:30 right here on 105.7 The Fan. But let's go out to the Window Nation fan guest hotline and talk some Terps with Gene Wong, who covers them for the Washington Post. And Gene, thank you as always for your time. So let's start with where they are. And it seems crazy to us. Arizona's the 4 seed in the East. Maryland's the 4 seed in the West. Why didn't they just flip that? And what do you think about Maryland having to go Seattle and San Francisco?
Yeah, that was the question we all were asking ourselves when we were watching the bracket reveal. And when we saw Purdue get the 4 seed, you know, also in the Midwest, and Maryland could have been there too, because Purdue obviously a little bit closer to the West Coast than Maryland is. Maryland's traveling the second farthest of any of the teams in the round of 64. Liberty's, I think, traveling like 5 miles farther, but still, at least Maryland has been to Seattle, so it's not like they're going to a place that's foreign to them. They went out there as part of their first Pacific Northwest swing when they played Washington on January 2nd in Seattle. So they know the city. They kind of know the routine. They're going to go out one day earlier to kind of get adjusted to the time change. Kevin Willard said he thought that might have had a little bit of a bearing on their loss to Washington. They're obviously a much better team now than they were then. And they kind of have a little chip on their shoulder after what happened to them against Michigan in the Big Ten semifinals.
I mean, do you stay out there, Gene? They want you back out there, right? 2 days before? I don't know. It used to be. I haven't been a long time since I covered a tournament. But when I did, they had to be there 48 hours before tip for media. Like, do you even turn around? I don't know that you do.
No. So they're going to get out there for media the day before. I mean, they're going to out there Wednesday. The media is the next day. Then they play Friday. And if they get through to the second weekend, they're not going to come back.
Right.
They're going to stay out west and go to San Francisco and, you know, or go to the Bay Area and stay wherever they're going to be at for their games at Chase Center in the Sweet 16. So, yeah, I mean, it could be a long, long road trip. But, again, like, it's something they've been kind of used to. Last time they were out there, they were gone for a week. This would obviously be longer if they advance out of the first weekend. But, you know, they'd be very psyched to be staying out there because that means they'll be playing more games in the NCAA tournament.
Well, Gina, it was a really interesting weekend overall where you had the tough loss to Michigan, but then you had the rumor swirl about Kevin Willard possibly connected to Villanova. Then there's the reports that they're close to a contract extension. I guess what's the latest with that situation?
Yeah, I mean, sure, his name was going to be obviously linked to Villanova because from his days in the Big East with Seton Hall, is, you know, familiar with all that, the conference and what have you. But Maryland and Kevin's people are in the negotiating a contract reworked, let's say, or extension, whatever you want to call it, to make him the top, one of the top 10 highest paid coaches in America. Based largely on this season, obviously. I mean, he had a home run pretty much with every guy he got here in the portal. He got Derek Queen to commit here when every major college wanted him. He was the last, you know, major recruit not to have committed until he chose Maryland. And they want to make sure Kevin stays here for a while because they're convinced that, you know, the guy knows how to pick guys from the portal and can recruit, as he's shown by putting together a completely different roster in the season before. And, you know, they have a great chance to me to go to the Sweet 16, if not farther.
Talking with Gene Wong, it's Inside Access here on the Fan. The other part about that, I guess the announcement-ish, the John Rothstein part of it all, is the revenue sharing thing. And the, like, 2 years ago, it didn't seem like they had much NIL, but now it seems like they're going to have, I don't know if significance is the right word, but enough to do what he wants to do.
Yeah, there's no question they've convinced the high rollers, the big donors that, yeah, Kevin Willard is going to be their guy for the long term. And also part of the deal, from what I understand, is there's going to be, you know, a multi-million dollar practice facility that they're going to, you know, be able to use to recruit, number one. That's the biggest thing, obviously, in this day and age, to get guys to, whether you're recruiting through the portal or recruiting high school freshmen or high school seniors, you need to have the facilities that match other major programs. And right now, Maryland doesn't. They have a coach so far whose track record has proven that he can coach with pretty much anyone in the country. He just needs the resources for when he goes to someone's living room to say, look, this is what we have. You know, we're as good as or better than any other of the major schools you're looking at. And you should try to come, and you should come to Maryland for that reason.
What do you make of the weekend, Gene? I mean, obviously, we worry about slow starts after all the time off. Yeah, that wasn't a problem, but it was a problem the next day. And
yeah, well, I will tell you, and we all know that the last four losses have come by one possession in the last seconds of a game. And Kevin knows that's an issue. I asked, talking to him after the game, he's like, if I see one more buzzer beater, I don't know what I'm going to do. I mean, we saw what happened against Michigan. Obviously, Michigan State, a shot from 60 feet. You know, they lose in overtime to Northwestern, and they lose with 7 seconds left to Ohio State when a guy hits a shot, banks a shot, you know, with 7 seconds to play. So, I mean, they've kind of been snake bit in these late game situations. And they've said, you know, they didn't do a better job. You can't let a guy like a Michigan, you can't let Trey Donaldson basically go the length of the court and hit a layup with basically no matador defense, right? I mean, that's inexcusable. And they have, you know, 4 days to prepare for their next opponent. And obviously what they want to do is not have it not be close. So that's not going to be an issue. But as you get deeper and deeper in the tournament and the opponents get better and better, theoretically, you think it's going to be a one-possession game in many instances. And that's the one area they really got to shore up. Because you saw their bench, Jordan Geronimo had 11 points, you know, against Illinois. So they're getting some more production from the bench. So I think they're slowly resolving that issue in terms of scoring. But they really need to get buttoned up in those last one possession situations and make sure that, you know, they're dialed in, because if they lose another one of those, I mean, that just obviously would be their end of the season because it's one and done now.
Gene, how surprised were you that Michigan dominated the class?
Yeah, I mean, we talked to Julian Reese about that at the end, and he just was shaking his head in the locker room, basically like flabbergasted that that would have happened. And they were minus 29 on the boards. And Maryland's one of the best rebounding teams in terms of differential in the Big Ten. I mean, it was stunning. Like, I think that was mitigated only because they forced 19 turnovers and committed 6, right?
Yes.
I think they were up. They were huge in points off turnovers, or else that game probably wouldn't have been close. And for a while, it looked like it was going to be a blowout. They were down 15 and came back and fought back. So it shows they do have character, obviously. They're not going to quit. But when you get out-rebounded by 29, you're not going to beat Grand Canyon, much less Michigan, right? So, and that's another area that they're looking at because they have the guys to rebound. Obviously, they've shown it by the numbers, by all the metrics. That was just the day that they were flat going to the glass. And let's give Michigan some credit. Danny Wolf and Vlad Goldin are going to be almost an impossible matchup for anyone Michigan plays. 2 7-footers who, you know, can shoot the ball from the outside, not traditional back-to-the-basket guys. I mean, they're going to really make you work. And Michigan's a team that could go far because they have a lot of momentum now, too.
Gene, before we let you go, what do you know about Grand Canyon?
Yeah, they have a bunch of guys who are D1 transfers. I know we can say that about a lot of programs, but we know Bryce Drew knows how to win in March. He's hit one. He's hit, you know, one of the most memorable shots in March Madness history. He's, you know, coached a bunch of teams that have made deep tournament runs. Their main guy is a guy named Tyron Grant Foster, who was the WAC Player of the Year a season ago, first team All WAC this year. He played at Kansas, so obviously you know he can play at a high level. They have another, Kobe Coles, one of their forwards, played at Butler and TCU, you know, high major. So, I mean, they have a squad, obviously, and having a coach who's been there and, you know, been part of winning teams in the tournament, it's not going to be easy. I know the spread is 10. I mean, I think this is going to be a tight one, and like we were talking about earlier, Maryland better hope it's not a one-possession game when it comes down to the end, because they're going to be thinking to themselves, uh-oh, here we go again.
Gene Wong covers the Terps for the Washington Post. Always great, Gene. Thank you so much for your time.
Okay, thanks, fellas. Anytime. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Coming up next, we'll get the text of the day, preview tomorrow show, and get you ready for Infinity Sports Radio at 6 here on The Fan.
I can't bone.
Before we get to the text of the day, a guy that we have had a fetish for a while.
G-Unit?
Aziz Ojulari. Oh. Giants pass rusher's been injured, but he gets the quarterback. I think he's had 14. He had 14 sacks the last two years. Signs a 1-year, $4 million deal with the Eagles today.
I guess he's got medical issues or something. I thought he'd get more than that. I'd take a flyer on, you know me.
Yeah,
I'd take a flyer. We know you.
You know pass rush.
Yeah.
Thank me for my service and thank me for my service.
I will. But, yeah, he's now an Eagle. And if there's a team that's going to take a flyer on pass rush, they got a ton of pass rush. So they go get another guy cheap and maybe...
Well, some has left the building. You can never... You know what?
You never have too much.
You never have too much.
I've heard somebody say that.
Appreciate it. One thing.
Yes.
Paying for it?
Yeah.
$4 million is not even paying for it.
It's not, not
chump
much,
chump change for pass rush.
Backup market. Quarterback money.
Yeah. Less than $1 million more than Cooper Rush got.
Maybe they've got their eyes on somebody else.
Yeah, Calais Campbell.
It's thinned out, though. Fowler went.
Yes.
It's thinning out a little bit.
And there's not much.
Judon's still out there.
Judon is still out there.
Za'Darius still out there.
Yeah. Get a whole reunion. Calais, Za'Darius, and Judon. Bring them all back. The Wheeze Kids, part two.
I don't know if they're all. You got 11 draft picks.
Yeah,
now.
I hear you.
You got to make room for them on the roster.
Ben, let's get the text of the day.
Check 1-2. Check.
Text today is sponsored by Orsman Automotive, driven by OrsmanCars.com. Your trade is always worth more at Orsman. Shop their entire inventory now at OrsmanCars.com. Text today comes from Howard in Baltimore, who says, Maryland struggles with bigs. That player from Michigan took Reese to school. He played like Hakeem Olajuwon. That was definitely another heartbreaking loss at the buzzer, but it was a learning process for this team. Rice can't go scoreless in the first half, then all of a sudden wake up. They could have won this game if they played the first half the same way they did in the second half. I have confidence in them going deep in the tournament. You just have to hope they don't play a skilled 7-footer.
Well, I don't know that there's a lot of teams out there that possess what... Look, Michigan and Michigan State, they have... Michigan has two skilled bigs, and Michigan State, they build bigs in a lab. They got four of them.
Yeah. I mean, the Rodney Rice part,
Nine shots.
He didn't get the ball. I mean, he was moving off the ball. They didn't get him the ball.
Yeah, that was the one that made no sense. You're wondering, like, is he healthy? Like,
because they said he was cramping up the night before. I'm like, is it more than cramps?
We had
the early subs, which I was like,
We were remiss. We have yet to mention the play where he sort of faked being hurt, and then he got up and hit the three and got fouled.
Cramping up.
Yeah, that was great.
He was cramping up.
Yeah. I don't know, but he just sort of was laying there, and then he got up and hit a three and got fouled.
That's what the Wizard, Johnny, and Coach Naki were saying on the broadcast as I was driving
for
to
the Illinois game?
See a concert.
No, what concert?
Jonathan Richman.
What'd you see?
Really good. I saw Jonathan Richman.
The band or the person?
Well, he was in a band called the Modern Lovers, but it's just him and a drummer now.
What happened to the rest of the Modern Lovers?
Don't know. Guy's 71 years old now, so he's not really
he's not modern.
He's not playing. He didn't play Roadrunner. He wasn't playing the old stuff, but it was cool. It was really good.
Yeah.
But I watched the first half. The game was well in hand. I was driving to the auto bar, and our broadcast on our network,
yes,
were saying he was cramping up. So that's what I'm going with, yeah. Bone.
What are you taking a shot at me for?
You deserve it, bro.
That's what you're here for.
Yeah.
That is true.
Is that not the hand you've been dealt by 105 to 7 upper management?
Yes.
I feel like that's the seat they sat you in.
Mm-hmm. I think that's
fair. Am I wrong? I'm wrong or I'm right?
No,
I'm right.
I'm not dead.
By the way, tomorrow, hopefully, by the time we hit air, we will know how Grayson Rodriguez's catch went.
Oh.
He's going to have a catch
tomorrow.
I'm going
to be on the edge of my seat for that one. You think he'll try throwing the sweeper?
I don't think so. I
don't know much about much, but if you're over there, let's not throw any sweepers during catch. Let's try to get through catch without a setback.
Yeah.
You think he could throw 34 pitches? Or 34 throws? I don't want to call them pitches.
Yeah,
34 throws? You think you get 34 throws out of him tomorrow?
Get 30 throws? Yeah.
34 might be a lot in the first time.
34 throws?
Well, what speed's he doing? How far is it? It's a habit of catch.
I mean, if you're playing catch, you think you're playing catch for at least 10 or 15 minutes. That's a lot more than
that's a lot
34
more than
30 throws.
Yeah. Unless you're going
unless
super
you're looking for a Ken Palm rating outside the top 375 in pace.
Yeah.
You're throwing it more than 34 times in 15 minutes. That'd be really methodical, Bone.
Methodical Bone, what do we have on tomorrow's show?
Tomorrow's show, we have Clarence Hill, who's covered the Cowboys for
a long time.
Get the latest on Cooper Rush and Cowboys. Rob Bradford, Baseball Isn't Boring podcast, also works for a sister station in Boston. Chris Nocke will be joining us as well.
I'm curious to get his thoughts about what the weekend that was, because there was
and about to spend two more weeks out on the West Coast.
Yes, well,
just how this tournament was planned.
Yes.
A tournament of four separate weekends, except for the Terps. Your first trip is 2 weeks.
Hey, it's 2025.
But this is totally on the up and up.
Hey,
okay, and Purdue, who's garbage and is like 3-6 down the stretch, they get to stay in the Midwest, play basically another home game as reward for what?
Well, as Viv pointed out,
they should have lost to USC.
As Viv pointed out, they are getting paid. So
it doesn't mean it should be rigged for certain teams at the Big Ten fight for it. It's just a job.
They get to go out west, have some good coffee, maybe go to the fish market.
Well, everybody else is going away for 48 hours and coming home. Yeah. These guys are going away for 2 weeks.
Maybe they like a 2 week vacation.
It's not fair. It doesn't matter what you like or what you don't like. It's a significant competitive disadvantage.
That is correct. Hey, Infinity Sports Radio coming up next. We'll talk to you tomorrow too.
Everything's fair at 105.7. No.